Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
McDonald's workers walk off the job in Florida. No strike at Time magazine, at least not for now. How about this one? Strippers organizing in North Hollywood. And today on the show, the government affairs director of the AFL-CIO and the jewel of the South, UA Local 72. Welcome to the Thursday, May 26th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on at least six platforms, just to name a few: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And don't forget to check out our revamped website, awfpodcasts.com, awfpodcasts.com. Bill Samuel is going to be our first guest on the show, longtime contributor. He is a great guy. He's the government affairs director of the AFL-CIO, AFL-CIO.org. And Bill told me yesterday he's got a couple of things to say about the recent shootings. We had the one in Buffalo on May 14th, and then this week down in Texas. I know this has been a political issue for a long time. And Bill, coming from the government affairs director, has some comments on that. Will anything happen? Probably not. Probably not. Let's be honest here. Build Back Better. What's going on there? You got Joe Manchin saying, it's too much. Obviously, there's some good language in there regarding the PRO Act, the Protect the Right to Organize. We'll see if there's any life left in that. Lifting tariffs on Chinese goods. We all know we are in very inflationary times, and the Biden administration is getting an urging here by a number of politicians to lift those tariffs so some of the prices will come down. Will that happen? We'll see what Bill has to say. Meantime, we're going to talk about regulations and safety. I got an email yesterday from the Workforce Protection Subcommittee. This is a Republican group. And, you know, they're not very happy with the administration. Why? Because the administration is putting more inspectors into the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. This is a proposal. They want to make sure that workplaces are safe. However, this committee said, well, wait a minute, you're just strapping businesses. Don't bother, because businesses can regulate themselves. Okay. I'm sure Bill has a few comments on that as well. There's another piece of legislation that we've been on top of, along with the Alliance for Retired Americans, and that's the Competes Bill. And right now, there's two versions. There's one in the House, there's one in the Senate, and they're trying to meld the two together. And there's some difficulty on that. Bill will explain where we are with that, because we want to compete with China. We lost millions of jobs in the last 20 years to China. We've got to bring those jobs back. Some of them are coming back. We've talked about the Intel plant, a number of them. Big one happening in Central Ohio. That would just expand that plant if we pass the Competes Act. So Bill's our first guest. Terry Newsom Jr. will be joining us later in the show, and he comes to us from the United Association of Plumbers, Pipefitters, and HVAC Technicians. This would be Local 72. They are based down in Georgia. They have a couple of locations in Georgia, headquarters in Atlanta. Terry is the business manager there. He is a fourth-generation member of Local 72, 28 years of service. Went through their apprenticeship program as a plumber. Also learned the mechanical side of the trade. Served as vice president for three years, and then served as a financial secretary for 6 years. And he's been the business manager for the past 17 months. This is quite a historic local. They go back to 1891. And you think about that time when Georgia was becoming the corporate an industrial hub of the southeastern part of the country. And the UA was in the middle of it all. And they grew along with Georgia. And today they call themselves the Jewel of the South. I love that. I just love that. So Terry Newsom Jr., that would be, will be our second guest on the show. Well, lots of labor news here. First off, McDonald's workers in Tampa, Florida, walked off the job this week, demanding better wages, improved working conditions, and the right to form a union without company interference. Wouldn't that be nice? Just leave us alone. We'll talk about getting a union. We think we can make it happen. Just leave us alone. The walkout organized with the Fight for 15 campaign marks the third McDonald's walkout in Florida in less than a week. Similar walkouts have occurred at other fast food chains in cities across the United States, so we'll keep our eye on that one. Meanwhile, Time Magazine workers backed off on their threat of a strike this week. Earlier this month, they threatened to walk out on Monday, May 23rd, which coincided with the release of the notable Time 100 list. The union decided to call off the walkout after management notified the union that they did not file the necessary paperwork with the federal government prior to bargaining negotiations. The union stated on Twitter, "If we were to strike, employees could be terminated and we could be sued. And the company could use this as leverage against us at the bargaining table." Time union members remain without a contract after nearly 3 years of bargaining. Now you know why they were talking about going on strike. 3 years, come on. The union says it's not giving up, pledging to continue to fight for a fair contract. In the meantime, a strike authorization vote for hundreds of pilots at Alaska Air Group is coming to a head. Even if the authorization vote succeeds, which could come at any minute, the pilots would still need the National Mediation Board to determine that the parties are at an impasse and that further bargaining would not be productive before a strike could be called. The negotiations on the new contract began in 2019, with pilots calling for better job security, flexible schedules, and higher wages with better benefits. Again, 3 years, still at an impasse. Similar fights are occurring across the airline industry, with pilots pointing to low pay, grueling schedules, layoffs of pilots during the pandemic. So that kind of screwed up their financial matters. And they're right now saying, we've got some leverage, let's do something. Meanwhile, let's go to North Hollywood, where a strip club is organizing with Strippers United. Safety conditions concerns are the major driver behind this union drive. The campaign comes soon after two workers were fired by the club after bringing up safety concerns regarding some of the club's clientele. Quote here, "If you are harassed or touched in a way that you don't like or recorded, you just have to endure it and do the policing and de-escalation yourself in the moment, and then maybe something will happen." That's what one worker told the organization More Perfect Union. If these workers are successful, the club would become the first strip club in over 30 years to become unionized. Well, keep our eye on that one. Interesting development there. And one more here before we take a break. Citing management's unwillingness to negotiate in good faith and its blatant disregard for the safety of nurses, technologists, and patients, 350 members of the Jersey Nurses Economic Security Organization went on strike this week at St. Michael's Medical Center in Newark, New Jersey. The union, which is affiliated with the operating engineers, said management is demanding givebacks from nurses and technologists at the bargaining table that defy 42 years of contract history with the hospital. President of the union is Alfreda Johnson. Alfreda says they want to eliminate the float block language that we bargained for years ago that keeps nurses in areas that they are competent and trained to serve. The union fought hard alongside members of the community to save St. Michael's from closing. That goes back to 2014. And we have a vested interest in seeing it succeed, but not at the expense of the nurses and the techs who care for the patients and the community every day. Comment from Elfrieda Johnson, president of the union. That's the Nurses Economic Security Organization on strike this week in New Jersey. All right, quick break. When we come back, Bill Samuel on behalf of the AFL-CIO.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
Hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland at 216-881-1802. Call Music Talent of Cleveland as your dependable source for professional musicians in Northeast Ohio. Union musicians add harmony to weddings, elegance to parties, and uplifting music for all events. Music Talent of Cleveland contracts solo and ensemble musicians as well as bands and orchestras for single engagements. So hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland today. 216-881-1802.
American workers are the best in the world, but we face an uphill battle against countries like China that don't play by the rules. There's a bill right now in Congress that would give American workers the trade tools we need to fight back and win. Join me in telling Congress to pass this bill. Visit AmericanManufacturing.org to learn how.
Paid for by the Alliance for American Manufacturing.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle, real simple, AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Labor Federation, all part of the AFL-CIO. Speaking of which, let's go to Washington, D.C. right now. And joining us, as he has for many, many years, Mr. Bill Samuel, Government Affairs Director of the Labor Federation, AFLCIO.org. Mr. Samuel, how are we doing today, my brother?
We're good, thanks.
Pretty rough week here. We've been in the middle of this whole craziness with the shootings. We had Frank DiRizzo on the show a couple of days ago. He's the president of Local 1 of the food and commercial workers in Buffalo. And we're talking about the, 10 people killed there. Yeah. All because somebody wanted to kill a bunch of black people. Four of them were members of that local. And while I'm talking about that story, we have that show posted on our website, revamped website, awfpodcast.com. And if you were so inclined to help that local out, like I said, they lost four members, families in disarray. Now, the workers are being paid by Tops Friendly Markets, but they have a relief fund set up. And all you have to do is check this out. Local 1 Relief Fund, 5911 Airport Road, Oriskany, New York, 13424. I know it's kind of fast on that, but if you go to awfpodcast.com, it's all posted over there. So, Bill, while we were airing that interview, the shooting breaks out in Texas. And I don't know when this madness is going to end, but I understand that, and this is a tough issue here, let's be honest, because nobody has an answer on how to solve this, but can you tell me what the AFL-CIO put out yesterday on this? They have a statement on it?
Yeah, well, you know, what's lost sight sometimes in the midst of all this tragedy is that these are workplaces. You know, these schools, grocery stores, as you pointed out, these are people that we are, you know, we have a responsibility to protect, the AFL-CIO and our unions. It's not just, you know, what we can do to, you know, bolster the Occupational Safety and Health Administration and protect health care and pensions. We have some responsibility here to protect our members' lives as well. And something needs to be done. It's not obvious what needs to be done. There are some basic things. You know, the AFL-CIO has been on record supporting enhanced background checks, for example. I don't know that we've gotten into specifics about what kind of weapons ought to be legal or illegal. It seems to me, and this is not an AFL position at this point, that an 18-year-old shouldn't be able to buy an automatic weapon that, you know, is used in combat and then enough rounds to kill a platoon without any questions being asked. That just seems kind of nutty, and there's this reflexive reaction from NRA supporters that, you know, we can't touch any element or any aspect of gun ownership. I don't think that's the labor movement's position, but I will say that President Shuler did put out a statement yesterday saying Congress needs to act in this area. We got to get rid of the arcane Senate rules that make it impossible for even a simple majority to take steps to protect people when they're at work or at home from gun violence. So that sort of gets us back into the debate about the filibuster rule. So we're sort of moving into that debate. I think we have to. We have a responsibility, as I said. We have to protect people on when they're at work. And these are people who are, you know, teaching our kids, you know, bagging groceries, working in movie theaters. I mean, you know the whole story.
Yeah,
But I think we have a responsibility here. We should not be ducking it.
The raising the age is one thing. I heard a story, and there's been so much media on this, that all these shootings going back to Columbine were individuals under the age of 21. So yeah, maybe that wouldn't be a step in the right direction.
Well, there seems to be something about the young, you know, male brain. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of science behind this, and I'm not, again, not a brain expert, but it seems that there could be some research done on this. And, you know, we don't let people under 18 drive. We don't let people under 21 drink.
Right.
But they can buy these deadly weapons. So, you know, you're right to raise it on this call, and I think the labor movement has a responsibility, and I think we will step up and we'll be part of this debate.
And when you say deadly weapons, we really mean deadly weapons. I had a conversation yesterday with Will Adig. Will is the executive director of the Union Veterans Council, and he's going to be our featured guest on Monday, Memorial Day. And Will served in Iraq and Afghanistan about a dozen years ago. And you know what he told me? He said the weapons on the street today, like this individual down in Texas, they're more powerful than the weapon that he had in Iraq and Afghanistan, that our military gave him to fight in that war. I mean, right. Go figure.
Yeah, what? It doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't make any sense. So I don't know what's going to be done. Probably nothing. I mean, we've been through this conversation so many times, and still nothing has been done.
Well, this gets back to the, you know, I hate to politicize it, but this gets back to, you know, the Senate rules. You know, there are a lot of issues that have 70, 80, 90% support among the American people. We can't get anything done in the Congress because the Senate still relies on this age-old, you know, racist-inspired filibuster rule. And I hate to be, you know, that harsh about it, but it's true. And it's keeping Congress from acting in all kinds of areas, you know, not just, you know, gun safety, but labor law, voting rights, you know, some very basic things that America is supposed to stand for and protect for our people. And we can't get to them. We can't even debate them in the Senate. And that's really a tragedy.
And Bill, let's be honest, the Democrats are not allowing that to move forward. We've got a couple of Democrats like Manchin and Sinema. They don't want to change the rules, right?
That's right. They've you know, they use this rationale that if we change it now, the Republicans will use it to pass bills with a bare majority that we don't want. Well, you know what? They're doing it now. So,
yeah.
I'm not sure what the argument really is there. So we've been very clear about that. You know, we took this position a couple of years ago that we ought to get rid of the filibuster. We ought to have majority rule restored in the Senate. And we stick by that, and it becomes clearer and more necessary every day. You know, with each new crisis that we can't address, it becomes more obvious that we need to fix our democracy, and that's part of it is getting rid of the filibuster.
I hear you. All right, Bill, let's move on and talk about legislation that may or may not be happening. For the last couple of months, we've been talking about Build Back Better. Again, Joe Manchin said there was too much in the bill; it was too costly. The PRO Act, some components of the PRO Act, protect the right to organize, were part of that legislation. What's the latest on that, or is there any movement here?
Well, I think there is behind the scenes. You know, there's a little bit of tea leaf reading here, and you know, there's a lot of speculation in Washington about the future of Build Back Better or Building a Better America, or what it really is, we're sort of back to calling it the budget reconciliation bill. This is the one bill that Congress can pass each year that is not subject to a filibuster because it's meant to get our budget in order. So it has to pass with just a bare majority. And Biden sent up a very aggressive package early in the year to deal with our economy, to create jobs, to protect the environment, do all kinds of things to help families manage life through the pandemic. And it's true, Manchin and most Republicans said it was too big, too costly. We didn't agree at the time. We think the problems are big, and we ought to be addressing them with big solutions. There are talks going on behind the scenes. I still hold out hope that there will be a budget reconciliation bill, whether we call it Build Back Better or something else, and that Manchin will join the rest of his party and a majority of the American people who support this, and we'll get a bill, and we'll deal with the climate, creating a whole lot of new energy-related jobs. It'll protect fossil fuel workers, and through this transition, which we need to go through over the next 20, 30 years, it will help families, again, manage, a very difficult time with finding daycare and child care for support for kids. And the PRO Act penalties is a piece of that. It's a small piece, obviously, but it's important to us. It's important to workers that we penalize employers who violate the basic rights of workers to organize. So that's will be part of this bill. We think it's a jobs bill in a lot of different ways, and that's how we're characterizing it. If we can get it done, and I still hold out hope we will get it done.
You mentioned it will protect fossil fuel workers, and I know Manchin was very concerned about that because he comes from a coal state, West Virginia.
Yeah, right.
How would this protect them? Do we have any details on that?
Well, it's going to put an enormous amount of money into research for clean energy. It's going to redirect, a lot of production toward renewable energy. But these are jobs that can be placed in the oil patch. These are, solar, wind, hydroelectric, nuclear, and clean coal. It can all be enhanced through the investments that are envisioned, that are contemplated in this bill. It's not going to, maintain every single job indefinitely. Can't do that. The economy's changing. Climate has to be addressed. But there's enough money in here to protect these workers, to help them transition, to make sure we have, adequate pensions and health care benefits as the economy moves away from fossil fuel. But we can do it in a sensible way. Most of the rest of the world is doing this. And our energy unions, they're carefully monitoring this, but I think they're on board with this notion that we have to transition to an economy that has more of an emphasis on renewable fuels while enhancing clean coal, nuclear, as I said. It's sort of an all-of-the-above approach. Right now, we're doing nothing, basically. And that's not helping anybody.
No.
I mean, a lot of these jobs are going away anyway, and so we've got to manage this transition, and that's what this bill is designed to do.
Now, isn't
there a lot
price
of jobs, by the way, that can be created in electric cars, electric
sure.
batteries? A lot. These industries are growing. They're growing in other countries. We're building a lot of wind turbines and solar panels in China. We should be doing that here, and that's what this bill does. It onshores a lot of this production. These can go to, our energy workers, and we can keep those jobs here, build more jobs here, and that's the whole point of this.
Now, isn't the price of coal pretty high right now? Which makes me want to think that there's got to be a lot of jobs in the coal industry. And you reference clean coal too. I'm sure part of that's happening right now. What do we know about?
Right.
That?
Well, natural gas is cheaper. Renewable fuels. The cost of solar and wind is going down. There are a lot of competitive pressures on coal, and that's happening with or without this legislation. We need to manage the transition, protect these jobs as best we can, protect the income and health care and pensions of these workers, and if we need to, invest in new jobs in those same communities, building batteries, for example.
And that's just
we need to think about this, and we need to act responsibly and intelligently. And if Congress doesn't do anything, no one's going to get the support they need.
Well, the industry is definitely ahead of the game on this. You're probably watching that Ford plant in Tennessee. We've done a couple of shows on that. It's like 5.6 $1 billion they're investing in Tennessee. I wish they'd do it in a state that wasn't a right-to-work state, but the bottom line is they're putting a lot of money in, and it's bringing a lot of construction jobs, and they're also doing the EV component to that.
Right, and actually another part of this bill we didn't talk about is as we invest in these new industries, we're going to make sure they're union. And that's something Joe Biden has said, and it's something that Democrats in the Senate have said. If we're going to invest in electric cars and wind and solar, offshore wind, we're going to make sure they adhere to the highest possible labor standards. And we can't do that unless we pass this bill. So everybody's saying it would be better to do nothing. Let's just deal with inflation, which, frankly, has nothing to do with this legislation. In fact, this legislation would help people, you know, get through this tough economic period, which is mostly caused by the pandemic and the supply shocks caused by the pandemic. But we can help. We can, as I said, we have to manage this transition. We have to help manage the economy, which most Western democracies do. That the government plays a big role in their economies. We have sort of this Republican ideology that we should keep our hands off, and you know, and in so doing, we're hanging people out to dry, frankly, and that's what we have to think. We have to face up to that.
You mean like not hiring any more inspectors to protect our workers? I have to talk about that. You know what I'm referencing here. I got to take a quick break. Yeah, some of the Republicans said that Biden is wrong because he wants to beef up OSHA. Well, let's talk about that next. Bill Samuel on our live line. He's a government affairs director of the Labor Federation. Later, we're going to go down to Georgia and check out the jewel of the South, and that would be the United Association's Local 72. Back in a few minutes, you're listening to America's Workforce.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on at least six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. When you get an opportunity, all you got to do is sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings, so please keep them coming. Let's go back to our live line here from Washington today. As he joins us each and every month, Mr. Bill Samuel, Government Affairs Director of the Labor Federation, AFL-CIO.org for complete updates. Bill, I want to talk about worker safety. We just commemorated Workers' Memorial Day, and that was a day set aside to talk about and remember the workers that didn't come home at the end of the day. And it's important that we have proper safety regulations in place. Many of those regulations have kind of whittled away over the years, and there's some in Congress that would like all of them to go away. And I guess Biden wants to add more inspectors to OSHA. Let's start right there. What do we know about that? Because right now there's not very many inspectors per workplace, is there?
That's right. We've got about one inspector for every 81,000 workers. Now that's, wow. that's the lowest it's been since the passage of the Occupational Safety and Health Act. It was 1970. And we've got about 1,700 inspectors nationwide to cover our entire economy. And it's just not adequate. And that's the reason that we still lose, 4,700, an average of 4,700 workers a day to workplace accidents and injuries that can be avoided. There's just no question that some employers cut corners. They don't ensure a safe workplace for their employees for whatever reason, to save costs, to bolster profits. And that's why we have a federal government. That's why we have OSHA. It's been around a long time, but it, as you said, it's been allowed to wither. And President Biden had recognized this, as President Obama did before him, and tried to beef up the agency, try to add to its budget, add the number of inspectors, maybe promulgate some new workplace standards. The workplaces are changing, all kinds of new technologies being introduced. Some are dangerous, some need to be regulated. And so the Republicans just want to erase evidence that there's a role for government here. And that's just, it's wrong. And, we've been trying for every year, we have this Workers' Memorial Day to draw attention to it. And for a couple of days, people talk about it and they forget. And then the Republicans start holding news conferences saying, we want to, cripple business by having workplace inspectors, at least available when needed. And again, with 1,700 inspectors in the number of workplaces, we have 130 million workers in this country. It's just not enough, and that's why we haven't made a big enough dent in the problem of workplace injuries and deaths. So we're just going to keep at it.
Yeah, and the Republicans are pretty vocal on this. They sent out emails yesterday. This is the Committee on Education and Labor. And they said that Biden is weaponizing OSHA. He's weaponizing OSHA against employers, and that's not the way to make workers safer. They feel that businesses know how to keep workers safe, so don't tie their hands. That's how they're positioning this whole thing. You think this has any legs? I mean, will Biden get his way on this or what?
I think you get into the arcane budget debate about how much should federal agencies receive in their annual budgets. I think hopefully, if we can hold on to the Senate and hold on to the House majority, I think we'll get a small increase in OSHA's budget. We can make some progress here next year. We've already passed a budget for the current fiscal year. We try to draw attention to problems like this, and there's obviously so many things to worry about in Washington to protect working families. But this is one of them. This is, again, making sure that people who go to work and come home safely is, kind of basic for the labor movement. So we do put an effort into this every year when the budget comes around, and we'll continue to do that. But we're going to need, I'm afraid we're going to need majorities in the House and Senate who care enough to put a little extra money. What we spend on, our defense budget, is compared to that, I think OSHA's budget is probably, one aircraft carrier. I mean, it's not, we really need to reorder our priorities some, and we're going to keep at it.
I hear you. And that's why we talk about these issues on the show, because mainstream media does not. I mean, it's so important that workers know what's going on in the halls of Congress. I mean, what good is your job if it's not safe? I mean, think about that.
That's right.
All right, let's move on to this competes bill. And last time you and I talked, I guess there's some differences between the House and the Senate version. Can you give us an update on where we are with that? And maybe should explain the bill, too. Go ahead.
Yeah, so this is the Bipartisan Innovation Act. It's had a lot of different names in the last year. It's meant to improve U.S. competitiveness, bring more manufacturing back to the United States, invest in research and innovation. It's a major piece of legislation. There's a Senate version and a House version. Each chamber has actually passed a version of this bill. The House called it the Competes Act. The Senate had a different name. They're now in conference, so that's progress. We now have House and Senate members meeting. There's about 100 conferees. It's a big conference. It's going to take a couple months at least to get this ironed out. And we prefer the House bill. And we think in terms of manufacturing, it's more focused on keeping manufacturing jobs and in the U.S. and bringing more back to the U.S. The Senate is a little bit looser in that area. It's got some trade provisions we don't like, frankly. But we're hoping this conference gets its task accomplished before the end of the year. One of the major components of it is getting our chip manufacturing back into the U.S. You know, this is what's hurting car production, and all kinds of things depend on chips. And we've let that industry go offshore. China makes most of them. So we're hoping that this bill can fund a resurgence of production in the U.S. in addition to research and innovation so that we can make sure that we're on top of all these new technologies and that we develop them here. It'll create a lot of jobs. And so that's the whole point of this bill, this conference committee. We think the bill will get done by the end of the year. There's enough Republicans who want to see this done as well that we think this will get accomplished.
Boy, I'm surprised it's going to take till the end of the year. You would think with everything that's going on right now, they'd move a little quicker on this. But I guess there's a few distractions in Congress.
Yeah, and Congress doesn't do anything quickly. I mean, that's life.
All right. I want to talk about tariffs. You know, we all know we're living in these inflationary times. And there's some of the opinion that perhaps if we lift those tariffs, that the price of some goods will come down. So, but the tariffs are good, too. Why don't you unwind this one for me, Bill?
Yeah, well, you know, during the Trump administration, he was very focused on China. And actually, that was one of the few things we thought we could work with him on. Now, he sort of indiscriminately imposed tariffs on China and kind of bashed China just as a sort of using it as a political weapon. And we thought we should be more strategic and make sure we have the rest of the world sort of with us on this. And he went off on his own and did it. But he imposed a lot of, a pretty big a series of tariffs on China, about $300 billion worth on Chinese products. And now the Biden administration is looking at it, going through carefully to see which ones make sense, which ones we should leave in place. We think this is going to take some time. We should be deliberate about it. We should be cautious. They are meant to even the playing field, make sure that we can keep production in the U.S. or move it back if countries are competing unfairly with us, and that's the whole point of the tariff regime. So Biden's looking at this. I don't think he's going to move precipitously. There's been some news in the last 24 hours that they're going to take their time. They're not going to act quickly. They're not going to bow to any kind of political pressure. This is going to do very little to address inflation. We have a huge economy, trillions of dollars, and $300 billion in tariffs is not really going to make much of a difference. We could wipe all of them out. It wouldn't lower prices significantly in any area. So we shouldn't talk about this in terms of dealing with inflation. But we should make sure that these tariffs are, they're aimed at the right products, protecting the right industries against unfair competition. So we think Biden's taking a measured approach. I mean, that's basically what we're hoping for. Nothing precipitous. Yeah. Nothing. Nothing done for purely political reasons. So that's our goal here.
Think it out, then. All right. Have you noticed there's another trade case in Mexico, and this is kind of a follow-up to the USMCA agreement? I think, there's a number of auto plants down there. Apparently, that agreement seems to be working in the right direction, right?
Yeah, we took a little bit of a risk renegotiating NAFTA, called the USMCA, and it was done, again, under the Trump presidency. Now, he would have sent a USMCA to Congress that we would not have supported. In fact, we threatened to try to kill it. And so President Trumka actually was enlisted by the then United States Trade Representative Bob Lighthizer to see if we could help negotiate a better deal. And we did. And we got Nancy Pelosi stood behind us and, Sherrod Brown, other, senators who were very supportive of having tough trade laws. And we got a new deal, and it was signed. And one of the major components was we can monitor and enforce labor standards in Mexico. And that's the whole point here, a level playing field, making sure that they can't skirt labor standards, environmental standards to try to undercut production in the U.S. That's why jobs have, you know, gone down there, because it's cheap to produce when you're not worried about worker safety, you're not allowing workers to organize, you're not doing anything to protect the environment. So USMCA says we can enforce that in Mexico. It's a rapid response mechanism. If we see a company in Mexico, a plant, skirting these basic internationally recognized rights, we can take action and we can keep those products from being imported into the U.S. It's a big change in how we enforce our trade laws, and that's what the USMCA did. And just very quickly, we've had a couple of cases. We've already won in auto parts in Mexico, and as you said, there's another one that's been filed by the United Auto Workers against a plant in Mexico, unfairly competing with the U.S. And if we win that, I think it could begin to change the economy of Mexico and make it not such an attractive place for U.S. jobs to be siphoned off to in the coming years. And we'll have, we can outcompete anybody if the rules are fair and if they're enforced. And that's
exactly
really what the USMCA promises.
I'm so glad you said that. We want fair rules, okay? We don't want to get screwed on
these. We're not building
walls.
We're trying to grant fair rules.
Yeah. The wall is crumbling, by the way, what Trump built.
Right.
So anyway,
right.
It's because they didn't use the unions, right?
Right.
Jeez. All right, my friend, we're going to leave it on that note. Bill Samuel, Government Affairs Director of the AFL-CIO, AFLCIO.org. You take care. Stay safe. We'll do this again in June, okay?
All right. Thank you.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going down to Georgia. We're going to check in with the business manager of United Association Local 72.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle AWF Union Podcast. Make sure you put union in there, AWF Union Podcast. Let's go down to Georgia right now. Joining us on line number two is Mr. Terry Newsom Jr. Terry is the business manager of UA Local 72. And I'll tell you, what a history. This is a local that started in 1891. And the UA itself started just a couple of years before that. So they have a long and storied history. Terry Newsom Jr., how are we doing today, my brother?
I'm good, sir. I'm good. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. They called you the Jewel of the South. Not you, but your local. So it sounds like you're doing pretty. How many members you got down there right now?
We are actually roughly about 3,500 plus. So,
how's the workload going there?
The workload is great. A lot of projects going on here in the state of Georgia right here. Very busy.
Now, you're in a couple of cities there. Where are you, in Atlanta or Macon, or what city are you in right now?
The actual main office is based right here in the Atlanta area. I do have a satellite office in Macon, Rome, and down in Albany, Georgia, which is south.
Good. How's your apprenticeship program doing? I know there's a lot of work. We got to crank out some new folks here. How's that faring right now?
That's going great. We just had our largest graduation class just this past Tuesday night. I believe there was like 64 pipe fitters, 24 plumbers, and I think about 42 service techs that actually turned out. So they're off to a great start in their career with a Local 72.
So Terry, how are you doing outreach? Because, you know, there's a lot of young folks that say, I don't want to get my hands dirty. I'm going to go to college. I'm going to study computers. I'm going to make a couple $100,000 a year right out of school. A lot of that stuff, you know, doesn't happen. So what are you doing at Local 72 to attract young folks?
One of the things that we actually just started is actually going to the high schools, as well as bringing the high schools to our over there at the training facility. We have a 50,000 square foot training facility over there, state of the art. It's about 3 years old, and also we're bringing in the counselors. The counselors, they have a lot of say with these high schoolers, if they're going to college or maybe to a trade school or something like that. So we're actually bringing the counselors to our school, speaking with them, and that's helping out a whole bunch for us.
Well, that's good. Yeah, they can definitely decide where your career should be. So obviously, if you get in the mix there, tell them about the trades. And as far as the work in the trades, what kind of money are we talking about down there in Georgia? I know you got a right-to-work state. You're definitely in play politically. I don't necessarily want to get into that, but the bottom line is, let's talk about the amount of money that somebody could make as a UA member down in Georgia.
So right now on the check, we're at $33.68. We have another dollar coming August 1st, put us up to $34.68. We are growing the actual wage up some, but yeah, you're right. We're down here in the South. Right-to-work states, kind of hard. We're not as strong as up north, but we're actually moving there, so we're actually doing better. So, but as far as money goes, I mean, there's a lot of overtime. There's a lot of jobs. People are actually paying over scale, so things are going great.
Didn't I just read that, Hyundai out of Korea, they're going to build a plant over there? And I know Biden said something to the effect that he hopes they go union. What do you know about that, Terry?
Just what I know, that is going to be located down in Savannah, right off of I-16. That's going to be in Local 88's jurisdiction down there. But, yes, that's supposed to happen from what I'm hearing. So that'll be a lot more work coming here.
How's that going to affect the United Association, especially will your local get some of the work over there?
We'll probably get some of it. That's going to be based out of Local 188 down there in the Savannah area. They don't have a lot of members like what we do, so we'll probably have to help out. So
good. So how's organizing going on there? I have to ask you that because, let's be honest, it's tough. You know, I mean, there's a lot of people that don't like unions in Georgia. So how are you faring there?
We're actually doing okay. And you are right. It is tough. We talk to a lot of people out there. If we send them at gas stations or just wherever, we'll have to pull up to them and talk with them, give them a card, tell them to call us. Come and join us, and some do and some don't, for whatever reason. But you're right, a lot of folks on here, they don't like the word union. So we're trying to change that mindset. So okay,
let's stop right there for a minute. When you encounter somebody that doesn't like you because you belong to a union, and this is Terry Newsom Jr. speaking, what do you say to that person? I mean, you talk to them about your job, your standard of living. How do you handle somebody like that, Terry?
I tell them about my job. I tell them about the actual benefits of actually being in a union. We actually get a wage on the check, and then the benefits is not coming off of that wage. That's coming from the contractor. For every hour that you work, they're putting in X amount of dollars towards your pension, towards your health care, all that stuff, as in on their side, they're actually getting all the stuff taken off of their hourly wage. Sometimes they get it, sometimes they don't. But yeah, that is a good topic to talk about.
Now, do some of the people, and I know this all too well because I've been in radio all my life, and I hear people say, oh, it must be nice. All you do is play records. All you do is talk. And it, when they see your paychecks, and I don't know if you want to share them, but they say, oh, it must be nice to make that amount of money. Is that part of the conversation there in Georgia?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is. It is.
That's crazy. It's crazy. Well, you just got to keep moving forward. So you, I was reading earlier, you're a fourth generation member of Local 72. Can we talk about that? Obviously, unions in your family,
yep,
going far back, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. That's on my dad's side. So it was my great grandfather, my grandfather, my dad, then me, and then I got uncles. And then that's just on my dad's side. On my mom's side, my grandfather was here, and I got a bunch of uncles also that's on that side of the family here. So there's like a whole bunch of us here.
So, Terry, I can only assume growing up then, you know, being in a union was something that they pretty much preached to you then, right?
Yes, sir. Yep, yep. I remember going to high school. I remember coming home with this piece of paper that the counselor gave me saying you got to have so many credits to go to college. I remember giving that to mom and dad, and my dad getting it, looking at it, saying, you don't even need this. I got your path already planned. So,
gotcha.
I actually graduated school on a Friday night, and my dad had me working Monday morning, and I've never stopped. And that was back in 1991. So,
God bless you. That's great. So you've been business manager, I'm reading, for 17 months. Now, I'm sure that was a little switch in a different direction for you. How has that been working for you so far?
It's been working great. Of course, you know, the workload here is great, so that keeps a lot of the pressure off of me. All the members are working. So it's been great. I was our financial secretary for 6 years prior to moving to the business manager role. So it was fairly easy as far as the swap over, but still, I love it here. This is my life. I give everything that I have to Local 72, so...
I hear you. So what do we look like down the road here? You got 3,500 members now. The work is great. We're dealing with inflationary times. I think that's going to settle down here eventually. A lot of new construction happening all around the country. I mentioned that Hyundai plant. What's your target? As business manager, as leader of Local 72, you've got to have your sights set on the future of how much you'd like to grow. And I'm sure the UA National would like to see you grow, especially in Georgia. What's your thoughts on that moving forward, Terry?
We are going to have to grow. There is no doubt about that. Talking with the UA, they would like me to be around a 5,000 to 6,000 member here. I don't know if that's the right number or not, because even though work is good right now, eventually it's going to tell off, and I don't want hundreds or maybe even 1,000 people sitting on the bench waiting for a job. So I'm not sure if 5,000 or 6,000 is the actual right number. So, but I would like to get around 4,000 members. I think I'll be okay.
When do you think you can accomplish that? That's another 500 members. How soon can you make that happen?
It ain't going to be fast. It ain't going to be quick. So that's that's a question that I don't know, be honest about it. So we are having a hard time getting people to come and work for us. Some people are fine making lower wages and then having to pay for the benefits out of their check. I don't quite understand that, but we've actually been told that you know, they say, hey, I'm fine making this. But I think also some of them, they don't want to come to the city of Atlanta because of the traffic. They don't want to sit in traffic for 2 hours.
Yeah. So. That is a big city. There's no doubt about that. I had the luxury of going to your airport. You have an awesome airport, I'll tell you that much. That's state of the art. But that's another story. I'll save that for another show. Terry, I'm going to have to button it up on that note. Terry Newsom, Jr., business manager of Local 72. They call themselves the Jewel of the South. You stay strong, my brother. Stay safe, and please stay in touch, all right?
Okay. All right. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
All right. That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, it's our segment called Working Class Perspectives. We're going to talk about the National Labor Relations Board and what they've been doing, and the latest from the United Steelworkers. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.